Case 38 of the woman one. Wu Zhu said, "It is like a buffalo that passes through a latticed window. Its head, horns, and four legs all pass through. Why can't its tail pass through as well?" He preaches us a sermon. If you can get upside down with this one, discern it clearly, and give a turning word to it, then you can meet the four obligations above and give comfort to the three existences below. But if it is not yet clear, pay close attention to the tail, and you will resolve it at last. And he gives us a verse. Passing through, falling in a ditch, turning beyond, all is lost. This tiny little tail, what a wonderful thing it is. So, Wu Zhu is just one of these delights. He appears four times in the Gateless Gate. My favorite moment, perhaps, if it isn't this one, is who is the true Chip? He likes to take these stories or fragments and repurpose them to our own awakening. Wu Zhu was the teacher of the editor of the Blue Cliff record, and then in his direct succession is Wu Min himself, the anthologizer of the Gateless Gate. As far as this case itself is concerned, it has quite an interesting place within the literature. As many of us here know, people have from time to time tried to take this wildness that is koan introspection and these collections of koan, which as near as we can tell, at least according to Victor Hori, find their origins in Taoist drinking games. And people try to tame them and make something of an orderer to it all. And you see these categorizations every now and again. The most famous, without a doubt, is Hakuin himself, the 18th century master who gives us our koan tradition through his student Takajo. Now, in his categorizations, I forget all of them, they don't all seem to quite scan, but there are the ones that deal with opening, boundlessness, the great empty, like Mu. There are cases that deal with the particularities of life. There are many of those. There are those that are nuanced and complex. And then there's the category that he called Nanto, which seems to roughly translate as fucking hard. And as near as we can tell, he identified eight of these. Victor Hori, again, if you've never read him, I do commend him as the great practice scholar, practitioner scholar of our koan way. Of those eight, through his diligent researches, he seems to have identified about 15. There is something in the nature of fucking hard that is idiosyncratic, that belongs to us individually. One ancient worthy said of Hakuin's eight nantos that they were his nantos. In our own style, where we collect notes and we often have notes that go back four, five, six generations of our teachers, I recall the first time that I saw in the notes from Eitken Roshi himself saying, this is a particularly thorny case. And I was utterly flabbergasted because there seemed to be nothing particularly thorny about it. It was a drive a Mack truck through soft margarine. To coin a phrase. 3 cases down, however, I met my match, my own little Waterloo, and sat there for a very, very, very long time. One of the few Nantos of Hakuin that we can clearly identify is this one. Wu Zhu said, it is like a buffalo that passes through a latticed window. Its head, its horns, and 4 legs all pass through. Why can't its tail pass through as well? Now, all koans deal with metaphors, and the buffalo is one of the great metaphors that we find in the Zen way. It's an East Asian standard. For us, we can also find echoes of it in the 10 bulls. That can be our buffalo as well, passing through the phases of awakening, culminating, of course, even in that last picture, which I find very important for us. The penultimate picture, the 9th one, is the emptiness one. That's not full awakening. The last one is this fat guy, which I've read Eitken Roshi's comments on this case many, many, many times. This is the first time that I noticed that he says the fat guy is Pute, Hotai, who is not only the Buddha Santa Claus and the fat guy that sits in many backyards, but he's also Maitreya, the Buddha to come. In a certain sense, all of us. And in that picture, it looks like the ox has disappeared, but in fact, there's a little hint of it somewhere, a horn or maybe a tail. So what is this ox that is this great, that's passed through? Another image that we use in our way. The whole invitation to awakening in the Zen path turns on our seeing the openness, the boundlessness, the great empty. And yet, here we are confronted with an invitation that suggests, even as we pass through to the great empty, something is left behind. Here a tail. Here a little tail. And on that tail hangs a tail. And David will tell it.
So it's really about the Mack truck and the margarine. we go along our merry way in our life. If we come and sit and if we give ourselves to this practice, we will have insight arises. These openings, little or big, maybe just an instant of walking and keening, and suddenly you're just walking and keening, and we can touch and appreciate this marvelous. Dharma. Dogen called it the wondrous Dharma, the myoho. This wondrous Dharma that is strange and inconceivable, that we can each one of us taste and touch and experience for ourselves, and that no one of us can carry it with us. So we have these moments, and all of us have had these moments, or we wouldn't be here. Sometimes we imagine that we come and we practice, and then someday we'll have these moments. But unless you have had some intimation of this, you would not be here. Maybe you hardly remember it. Or maybe it's quite vivid, some moment when all of the struggle and all of the difficulty dropped away. Just you walking in the woods. Just you singing the song in the shower. And so these moments arise, and we might say that we pass through. In that moment, we are our koan is in realization. Suddenly, all of the doubts and all of the red herrings that swim through our life are set aside, and it becomes very simple. And then the next moment comes. And then the next round comes. And then the next day comes. And we wonder, where did it go? It seems so easy, so clear. What happened to it? And for me, at least, for the first 10,000 times this happened, I was sure that there was something wrong with me. Well, just practice harder. If I practice harder, then when it comes, it will not leave. I will get fully through the next time. But after a while, perhaps, hopefully, we all begin to see the pattern. The tail won't get through. No matter how hard we try, we still encounter our life. And so this marvelous tale, I love the poem at the end, because from our normal perspective, this tale is quite a problem. And we can all describe the tale that we carry, that we just, if I could just get that sucker through the window, I'll be good. And this great problem, it may be this great, the one who condemns us. As we were reciting Tori Zenji's vow, I heard in a new way we should be especially grateful for someone who turns against us and treats us bitterly. Do you know who that is? he is sitting right close to you. She is right here, the one who turns against you again and again. And he says, we should be grateful. Not this is a problem that eventually will get that sucker out of our life. But this very problem, this very one who is so deluded, I mean, let's face it, this one has no hope for awakening for this one. And this is the good news. This is what saves us from being total jerks, right? Being a jerk is a real professional hazard for all human beings. But I think maybe especially in Zen, when we're dealing with something that is so precious, that we long for so deeply, and that when it appears is so vivid and so trustworthy, we think we've got it. And when we think we've got it, watch out. I was talking with the leader of a teacher in another Zen community, and he succeeded a teacher who caused great harm with secrecy and sexual predation on his students. And so... my friend is now determined to bring it out into the open and to correct this. And I think this is on all of us, the abuse that has happened in almost every Zen community, the abuse that happens everywhere. We have some great obligation to name it when we see it and to do something. And my friend is quite passionate about this, and he said, "I am so committed." He said, "I would never do that. I would never, ever, I can see no circumstance under which I would ever be like that." And I said, "I can't say that myself." And he looked at me. And I said, "I totally share your commitment. And each one of us must commit to being compassionate and to living by rules and to doing no harm. And yet each one of us will do great harm. Each one of us is blind. These people who have, these teachers who have made great transgressions are not different from you and me. And this blindness is something that humbles us, should humble us again and again. This life of one humiliation after another is the life of setting down oneself after the other. Again and again, this wonderful tale of disturbance. And so this is our project here, to not imagine there is someplace else, and to, as we are able, to turn toward this tale, to turn toward this blindness, toward this stuckness, toward this nanto self, with some appreciation, wonderful, marvelous, can never get through. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably, and if you want to come around from behind the fireplace, you're welcome to fill in spaces. So, comments, observations, questions?
Tails.
Marjorie.
Steve.
Thank you. So that's quite a thing to be grateful for the, you know, the very things that keep humiliating us over and over. Right?
Yeah. Can you hear in the back? Yeah.
He's not happy being grateful for
things that humiliate. Well, I don't know. I hadn't ever really thought about it exactly quite that way. You know, that this particular thing that is so humiliating the thing that helps us to keep from getting stuck in this place of thinking that we know and leaving the actual real world and becoming, you know, a guru or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And somebody comes along and says, "Hey, you know, what about this?" Or even worse, internally, you know, that oh my God, you know, I'm really screwing this up, and I thought I was all set, and obviously I'm not, and that would be the very thing that would, you know, keep us from floating away. Is quite a thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for presenting that.
Yeah.
I've been spending a lot of time with my tail this retreat. Struggled feeling a positive relationship with it. Maybe that's enough. There is something, though, to this. Josh would call it entrusting. I've been playing with over the course of this retreat, and it's funny because for a time it's, you know, this whole there's the tail and there's the not tail, and this dividing like this has felt in and of itself has felt like a problem for me. So and yet not dividing also hurts when you're just a tail sometimes. So, you know, again, that sort of like, well, what to do then? Just kind of stuck. And there's something about that stuck place that maybe some other people can relate with. It's interesting. I'll just mention that I've felt like I was the only one stuck this retreat.
Agree more.
I knew there was someone in the room. I just wasn't quite clear who.
It's me.
We'll fight over that later.
Thank you for the rest of us.
Some gratitude though for Sangha, because so for me, often entrusting begins small, and it starts with kind of like, oh, okay, well, I can let this be with this group of people. Mm-hmm. This place, it's safe. I can let it be there. And then there's a feeling like, wait a minute, maybe I can let it be like with the world or with, you know, life. There's a sense of real relief, and it doesn't feel, you know, that dualistic quality doesn't feel like it's there anymore. It feels like there's being saved by all beings is the same thing as saving all beings in that entrusting moment. Mm-hmm. So I'm thankful for the teachings, very thankful for the teachings today. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
I think that starting small is so important because, you know, we hear something and we think, okay, I've got to do it or I should do it. And so much of this is not, you know, we can't, so nice to think we should have a positive relationship to these parts of ourselves. So what good does that do you? Except it's one more thing to feel bad about. Man, I can't even have a positive relationship to the crappy part of myself. So this, you know, as we say again and again, really to notice what's here. And this theme from yesterday about staying, you know, and Mike, I think you point to this, the value of Sangha. You know, when our car gets parked in by Sangha, we can't go. And we are blessed. because that's the teaching, is that we will be cooked by our life. Part of what we're doing is learning to tolerate the heat. And we so help each other in that.
And for me, I just the real incredible smallness of the small where we start. You know, the first gesture of turning towards is so tiny as to be like almost trivial, but that actually is it. I appreciate you pointing that out.
What keeps coming to mind for me, I can't remember if I've already talked about it. I've been on retreat for too long, over-meditated.
Over-meditated.
So,
You need to cut there.
You think this is over, man? But the, you know, that Steve brought this in one of his early Dharma talks a few years ago, this year, really a few weeks ago. This appreciating the wound, which is a medical term. It doesn't mean enjoying it or liking it. It means checking it out so you get to see it's this many centimeters, it's red, it's pulsating, it's got this kind of thing. It's an appreciation, I think, that we have to keep remembering again and again, not appreciating like, yay, great, the tail, because that sets up that duality. But what is it? What is it? What is it? What is it? And starting small, or sometimes it is a Mack truck through marjoram, coming at you, not going.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then grease and mess, just things like that. But this takes, you know, to do what we're doing here, to have decided to come to Sesshin, and maybe you thought you knew what you were getting into. And then even those of us who've been on Sesshin over and over and over again, we come in with some sense memory or some idea of what it was. But because it never ends, going back to the koan from yesterday, because there's no done, that means that there's something brand new now. And can we appreciate it in this medical sense? Can we actually bring ourselves to it, appreciate? Can we come to it fresh? It takes a lot of courage to do that. Brave ones all. So I'm just continually impressed by everyone here who's still here. You haven't run screaming out of the room. Maybe in your head you have many times, but at least not physically yet. And that says a lot.
Chris and then Pierce.
I want to thank you for your reading of the Bodhisattva's Vow, David. Even though someone may be a fool, we can be compassionate. Which generally I've used in a fairly condescending manner. Oh, here comes my favorite Buddha.
Yeah.
Help free me from my attachments. Practice patience. And, you know, whoever that may be. But actually, you know, I'm like 500 to 1 in terms of bitter treatment and ill speech to myself than from others. I mean, you know, how often do people actually really speak bitterly to me and treat me poorly? It's really not very often. But I do it every day. Which means I am the Buddha appearing to myself to find ways to change my own attachments. So that will turn that on its head when I chant it henceforth.
Thank you.
I love that. I am the Buddha appearing to myself to free. I mean, this is the teaching. This is the one bin teaching. Right?
Right.
It's not separate. That we imagine it's that person, you know, is the Buddha, but it's all us. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Pierce.
Thank you. I think I have been carrying around the tale of yesterday's koan, and the idea that one could be done with wrong, because that's how I heard it, that the student, by telling the story, revealed that he had come to the end of wrong. And that, at the time, seemed to me a kind of desirable state. And I noticed that, you know, going through the retreat, I noticed myself rejoicing when I feel good, complaining when I feel bad. Mm-hmm. And that seems somehow, in regard to the expectations that I bring to retreats, it seems I always bring the same expectation, which is to have a clear and perfectly comfortable mind, and that even though I know that expectation is continually frustrated. But this koan is a reminder, I think, for me that there is this, in all of us, in me, a kind of denying force, and that that's as it should be, because I mean, we can all identify it with personal history and so forth, but if it were any other kind of world, we wouldn't recognize it without a force that is active, a force that that resists. We couldn't work in any way, I think, if that force weren't there. And so this poem calls me to think again about wrong and to think about my own desire to put away wrong or to put away unpleasantness. Unpleasantness is an opportunity to be with it. And so, in some sense, is joy or happiness. I think that's what my practice is.
Thank you for that. I, when I was listening to James talk, I was thinking, well, that's easy. Just let go of whatever your attachment is to the world. And when I listen to David, I'm like, oh.
The good news and the bad news. He sort of pitched it down the plate, and I.
So I get caught in that 1,000 times over and over, just not wanting to have the tail. So thank you for.
So my experience of the tale is that I'm really afraid to be a jerk and really afraid to generate conflict or to stand out in a way. And for me, I think I have to really embrace stepping into jerkiness and just be willing to make mistake after mistake after mistake. So, that's my tale.
Yeah. It's a good tale. I would add in here that there are multiple layers of reality being expressed at the same time. We kind of drift into our own messiness and how we betray ourselves and how we maybe can profit from reframing that. And these are true and important things. And there's another assertion that the case itself is like driving home, I forget, it's the butter or the Mack truck. There is no other way to wake up. You know, this is how we will wake up, is finding that tail, whatever it is for us, whatever it is for us in this moment. There's a great invitation here, in addition to dealing with the mess. There is something else as well. Well, and I would say it's all so intertwined, you know, but this invitation to use what's here, and that we so need that. And the courage it takes, I think so many of us in this room have been so trained to be nice. You know, it's really one of the highest values, certainly for me growing up, you know, be nice and don't cause trouble. I think if we're true Zen students, there has to be something more important than that. And this more important will cause trouble. Of course we cause trouble anyway, right? We upset people even however much we try, but I think there's something about caring about something more than smooth waters, because this is not the territory of smooth waters. Yeah. Bob, and then...
Right. Well, you know, and what you said about to your friend, the Zen teacher, was so important, because you know many of us are trained to be nice, but we're also trained to push that other stuff away. That is not me. And your friend was saying, "Oh, that kind of teacher who has those kinds of desires, that's not me."
Right.
And whenever we do that, we are in deep shit. And I think what the practice does is it keeps bringing back up all the other parts of being human that we keep saying.
You offended Michael.
I'm out of here.
Mike's got all those qualities I don't want.
Right, thank you for saying that. Did you want to say anything?
No, I'm done. Yeah.
Because whenever we say not me, the not is like extra. We're saying me. And this is something I've been feeling in this whole conversation. So I so appreciate James pointing to the multiple levels. There's something about waking up where we wake up to the one bin, where we wake up to every single thing we encounter is the Dharma. There are no exceptions and no exclusions in this deal. And the tail appears to be something we could do without, so we not it, we not need it. But it's who we are. Everything, even, you know, trying to be nice, you can't ever get rid of it. Don't even try. It might transform. It's good to be awake to it. These are patterns of behavior. But in the Dharma, being a jerk, being nice, they're all part of the big picture. So it's just very important to watch that othering, the not me habit. And then also on another level, the not me habit is it too. Right? There's no escape here. Every single thing. So this is not a self-improvement weekend. I say that a lot. But it's a seeing to the true nature of self. What is the self? Where do I make the division? The division is where things really start to be like a knife in the heart.
I just appreciate that you just blew my mind with that not me is me precisely by virtue of being not me.
It's like a Mack truck to the heart. Of Marjorie, to the heart of Marjorie.
The heart of true self.
True self. True self, Marjorie.
can I do this?
Yeah, we have to. That was an inside joke that has to be.
It must be
a
now
communal
told.
Story.
Because I wasn't involved in it, I feel like I can tell it.
Or should Ed tell it? No, you know.
Sure.
You should tell it. No. The participants,
the participants
need to be
only,
victims.
Only okay. have one view. Okay. Also, they all have right. one view. So. Often it's our tradition before retreat starts that the Tenzo and the assistant Tenzo, the two cooks, will go shopping. And this time the assistant Tenzo volunteered to go shopping and the Tenzo sent him a shopping list. But he could only receive it on his cell phone and it was hard to read. So David generously offered, because he is Mr. Generosity.
Fine. Helpful.
To receive it on his computer and print it out. But when he looked, he saw that the shopping list was a potential for a textual teaching. And because it had...
Or trouble.
Prank. carrots 6 next to it, and, you know, milk 4, and all this sort of stuff. So in the middle of the sheet, he wrote, true self 1.
Which is great until the phone call.
So down at a supermarket called The Big Y.
You can't make this stuff up.
Our assistant Tenzo is going down his list and he sees true self 1. And he thinks to himself, maybe this is some kind of special margarine.
Tying it all back in.
See, there was a point.
And so he Googles it. And the only thing that comes up when you Google true self is true self. So he calls the Tenzo, who says something like, oh, yes. You know, Sashin is starting. I think you'll be able to find it there.
I actually, in the phone call, said,
I've looked.
By the way, the Tenzo knowing nothing of the altercation to a shopping list.
He gave the Dharma answer.
He gave the Dharma answer.
You're welcome.
No longer an inside joke. I love Sashin is Sashin, and after Sashin, you're easily entertained. That's what it turns out. The entertainment gene, whatever, receptors.
Bring us back to reality here, Harry.
Yeah, Harry, come on. You had a
question. Me?
Yeah, and you can use this, by the way.
Use this as material?
Yeah.
with the bowl thingamadig, whatever, I find that I'm very attracted to the front end because it's getting stuff done. So I don't want to let that go. And I've been slashing through windows so many times, it's just this damn tail. So at least I'm getting something done. So I will continue to do it again and again, because that seems to be the thing that gets me somewhere, even though I'm being held by something. So there's an attraction to the big, bold front end, the muscular head butt, and plus I put a lot of time and effort into this thing that's not working repeatedly. So I don't want to give that up. So there's an attraction to the powerful front end of the bull, and this little tail that doesn't even have a muscle is not helping me. But I'm not taking everything with me when I do that. And I'm going crazy doing the same thing again and again.
Yeah, but just try it a few more times.
A few thousand more times.
That's such an important thing to say. A lot of people were nodding when you were talking. I really appreciate that.
I have an image. I have an acquaintance who's actually like a Dharma illustrator, and I was thinking that I was going to commission a version of this koan with Teeny Bull and a giant, huge, like 97% tail.
And really, part of what we're the work we're doing here is feeling the power of our attachment to this the one who wants to do. That I think it's so important to this awareness that we, because we can't just stop it, and it's been so valuable, and we don't actually want to get rid of it, but to feel how we're sort of one-trick ponies. And even though the trick doesn't get us what we want, I still know the trick, so to really feel that and it's not about saying, well, that's bad, I'm never going to do that again. So I really appreciate what you're saying about we really get to see again and again, each one of us, the grasping, you know, something happens and we can feel that. And the teaching is that just by bringing awareness to that, just by beginning to see this in a compassionate way, oh, here I go again, that something gets worn down. We get worn down. It gets worn down. And at some point, we see there's maybe some other possibility. But thank you for saying that. Let's stop here.